Hey everyone, welcome to Deeper Than Dough. Today I'm joined by Kian Price, the CEO of Balloon Artisan, a company creating show-stopping balloon installations for events across the country. Kian shares his journey from overcoming the balloon guy stigma to running a business that completed over 1,000 projects last year alone. We explore lessons in scaling, finding purpose, and balancing business with family life. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoyed this episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deeper Than Dough podcast. Today I have Kian Price as a guest. Kian, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, dude, I need to tell you thank you because, and I was waiting to hit record, since you invited me, you and Hope, your wife, invited me and Ileana to that cocktail party, like at the cocktail party, let me explain what it was. Got an invite from you and your wife, and you can explain a little about her business as well because she's killing it. But it was, hey, come with a bunch of couples. Let's learn about cocktails. And we made like 8 different drinks in different glasses. Everybody was drunk. You were wasted like halfway through. I loved it. It was a great time. Then I came home. I kid you not. I got fresh mint leaves in my fridge. I got rosemary. I bought all the shiz to make cocktails. And, you know, it's super fun. So thank you for opening up that world and inviting me to that.
Absolutely. I don't know if your liver's grateful, but hey, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
Okay, well, let's jump right into just, I guess, a little bit of your background. Can you give our listeners a minute or two of who you are, where you're at, where you're going?
Absolutely. So currently I'm the CEO of Balloon Artisan. It's a balloon arch decorating company. So we build balloon arches for birthdays, baby showers, corporate events, grand openings, conventions, all sorts of cool things. We've built some of the biggest projects in the world. We did 1,008 projects last year alone. So this is, it's definitely grown. I've been an entrepreneur full-time for, I think, 13 years now. The balloon thing hasn't always been my main gig. I was the head of a marketing agency for 4.5 years where I learned digital marketing, and I've been part of various software startups as part of a baby monitor company. It was a baby monitor that could see whether or not a baby was breathing just by the changes in the pixels on the monitor, on the display. Wow. And so that was pretty cool. That ended up getting acquired, went through that journey. And yeah, I've done all sorts of things, lots of struggle, lots of trial, lots of agony, lots of fun, lots of learning, and it's been a great adventure. So
13 years with Balloon Artisan, how many of those years have you been full-time? That's just been recent, right?
Yeah, 2018 is when, I just kind of, like, everyone's like, dude, you're the balloon guy, you just got to embrace it. I'm like, I'm not the freaking balloon guy. Like, I don't want to be the balloon guy. The balloon guy's like the 40-year-old living in his mom's basement that has, like, no friends and that smells funny. Like, I'm not the freaking balloon guy. And then one day, I actually had kind of a pivotal moment. I started thinking, like, instead of being ashamed of being a balloon guy, what would it take for me to be like, hell yeah, I'm the balloon guy. Like, damn right. And I'm like, well, what if I start making some of the biggest projects in the world? And I start getting into some of the most prestigious events and working with some of the coolest clients and just building really, really big stuff. And so that's what I set out to do, and I was actually pretty successful at it. Then I got to, the point that we had people flying me all over the country with my small team, and we were building all sorts of cool stuff. So that was 2018 when that happened, and since then, it's been full-time Balloon Artisan.
So let's dive into that. Ashamed to be the balloon guy, because coming from the door-to-door world, I faced that. I'm like, well, I don't want to be a salesperson, right? But I quickly got over it because I'm like, that is poisonous. If I tell myself I don't want to be who I, what I'm doing, like that doesn't align. You and I'm not going to mention the name. We have a mutual friend that I think we've talked about that same thing, starting a company, but he brags about how he doesn't sell anything and he's not a salesman and he's at the company and they have, nothing going on because there's that stigma of like, I don't want to be that person. And you do need to rephrase that. I think, in order to be successful, you have to have a purpose in whatever you're doing. I mean, I think you do. So like I did pest control, recruited a bunch of dudes that were all 22 or selling pest. Who believes in pest control at 22 years old, right? Nobody does, but you have to believe in it. So I believed in it and I trained my sales reps to believe in it by, if you don't sell that house, nothing happens, right? But if you do sell it, look at how the economy is stimulated. Now somebody has a job to go spray the bugs and we have to buy the solution from another company that gives them jobs and we have to have trucks and tires and gas and that goes to taxes. And it's just like sales runs the economy. Let's rephrase it. Now we're very important. Just like you're important to be the balloon guy. But anyways, talk to me about that. It doesn't have to be balloons, but generally speaking, like that either acceptance or shame on who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah. So right out of college, I got a job working in investment banking at Goldman Sachs. And I think that's where a lot of the shame came from, because like I was pretty smart. I did really well in school and everything. And at Goldman Sachs, I did pretty well for the time I was there, even though I hated the experience. But everyone just harassed me for being the balloon guy. They're like, oh yeah, making balloon animals in the park. And then like that just really beat a lot of shame into me. And I really felt bad about that and that trajectory I was on. And then I think a lot of my mindset, I mean, it's always an evolution, right? It's always a process.
Yep.
But COVID is really what solidified that in my mind. It's like, wow, dude, like events have been banned and now we're all depressed as hell. And some people did well in COVID, but I'd say by and large, most people did not do well. And I was able to see firsthand what happens when you start isolating people and when you start taking away those momentous occasions and you start, you know, downplaying the importance of those or downplaying the ability to celebrate. And that's really what solidified it to me. So, I mean, yeah, it was definitely an evolution. And then I started realizing that, just like you said, like there are a lot of jobs. Like Balloon Artisan creates hundreds of jobs now. It's crazy. We help the event planners. We help our artists. We help our event coordinators in-house. We help our graphic designer and our video team. And there's so much economic activity that comes from this simple little thing. And then, you know, just in a, like a grander scale, when I think about my life, there's like a handful of moments that really stand out to me. Uh-huh. And one of the coolest things about Balloon Artisan is, you know, say we live an 80-year life and we're on our deathbed and we're looking back at the end of our lives. Like, what are those moments that are really going to be most influential to us? And what are the things that we're thinking of? And what are the things we'll be remembered by? Well, a lot of the times it's these milestone occasions, the birthdays, the first grandchild, the, you know, opening your first company, the ribbon cutting ceremony, all that stuff. And I finally came to terms with the fact that, hey, like being in the balloon space, like, yeah, maybe it's a quirky thing, but every day I'm helping people celebrate their best moments in life. Those once in a lifetime milestones that once they're here and gone, you can never get them again. Mm-hmm. And that really just changed things for me. And now it's like, yeah, dude, I'm the balloon guy and I have no shame about it. I love it.
Science has definitely shown, again, going back to that deathbed scenario, you're looking back on your experiences, not what you bought, right? So it's like, okay, it's going to cost me a few grand to really go out on, you know, on this event to add, you know, a really good balloon display everywhere. Now in 30 years when I'm dying or whenever that is, I could have went and, you know, purchased, I don't know, a lot of food or whatever, something material, right? But time and time, and it's like, we've seen that experiences is what increases happiness levels and not material goals.
Absolutely.
Those events. And that's what you're focusing on, which is really cool. Do you have, how satisfying is that, I guess? Like going to a cool event or a wedding. All my siblings, I feel like, are in the wedding industry, but it's like to be part of such a special moment. Is there some joy and satisfaction that comes after you complete some of these really cool events?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest projects that we ever built, it was a balloon installation in the Salt Palace. So big convention center in Salt Lake City, Utah, big concrete room, very boring, very bland, very drab. And we just lit this thing up with this massive 80-foot wide balloon installation. The thing was huge. Like one balloon on that thing was 8 feet tall. So just massive. And the look on people's face when they walk into, you know, like everyone at a convention looks kind of depressed and like, meh, like I'm just here because I have to or whatever. When you see a 40, 50-year-old person walk into a room and they're looking down at their phones and they look up and they're like, holy shit. Like that is awesome. Yeah. And that's one of the most fulfilling things, especially in our industry, is just taking a step back and watching people have that holy shit moment, right? Just, wow, that's incredible. And I've really learned to love that. I think one of the big challenges though in the space is, I mean, today I think my team's closed like 7 or 8 more projects for our team, which is awesome, but sometimes it does get a little like mundane from our standpoint. And so we always have to remind ourselves as a team, like, hey, this isn't a day where we closed 8 sales. This is a day where we helped, you know, John with his grand opening or Susie with her baby shower for the first grandbaby or whatever it is, right? And so we really try to kind of separate what we're doing from like the logistical business side and really take time each day to reflect on the moments that we're helping make happen and reflect on the people we work with. And I think that's been a really powerful thing for me and my mental health and just my drive to keep going forward.
Yeah, no matter how big that purpose is, if you're not conscious of that purpose, it doesn't matter, right? So what I'm hearing is like, there is a purpose, we're excited, and everybody who's listening to this knows. You can get super excited about anything, but you do it for 13 years and it becomes boring unless you are continually spicing it up on purpose, right? And reframing and changing the perspective and reminding yourself. Right before this, we were talking a little bit about why more doesn't mean better. And I want to hear your thoughts on that, but I want to hear your thoughts on how does that relate to success for your business? You know, what does the success look like today in 5 years, whatever? And then now we have to take in, okay, well, there's growth, but there's also more doesn't always mean better. How are you navigating all of that?
Yeah, man, I am learning that lesson real time right now. And it's rough. It's a hard one. So I mean, I feel like as entrepreneurs, it's really easy to be like, yeah, up and to the right, like hockey stick growth. Let's go. Let's push. Let's open more locations, do more sales, like hire more people. And one of the really ironic things, like right now I'm doing fairly well financially. Balloon Artisan's doing well. Our team's paid very well. We're in some of the coolest events in the country, in the world. We have a lot of high-end VIP private clients hiring us. And it's been really cool. But looking back on my journey, some of my most stressful moments are happening right now. And actually, just yesterday, I got off the phone with my insurance guy, and he's like, yeah, your premiums are going to jump up 8x this next year. I'm like, what the? Dude, 8x? What the hell? I'm like, but there's like the risk hasn't jumped up 8x. And he's like, but your revenue has. I'm like, but our risk has not. Like, we're not any more risky. Like, maybe we're twice as risky to the insurance company, but we're not 8x. And he was talking to me. He's like, dude, you're going to start realizing really quick as you start growing that everyone wants to take a whack at you, right? Everyone's trying to get money from you. Everyone's trying to like make you jump through hurdles. Everyone's trying to convince you why you need them to succeed. And I can tell you right now, I am not enjoying that part of my life at all.
I like that you're super upfront and, you know, open. You're like, it's right now. Yeah. Usually it's like, oh, it was a few years ago. It sucked, but I wasn't open about it during it. I just suffered through it. And then now that I got through it, let me share the story. But how much more valuable is it in the moment? And I try to focus a lot on that last year, because the first 6 months of last year, I thought I was going bankrupt every day. I was starting to share it at least a little bit. But man, what a stressful time. So what do you do to deal with that? Like, this is stressful. You're not enjoying it. What are daily or weekly practices, philosophies that you're doing that you would encourage others to do if they're going through a similar phase in business and life?
So many tears, brother. So many tears. One of the things that I've really learned over the past couple of years, well, I guess I've had kind of an overall like paradigm shift in how I view the world. I used to be very idealistic, very optimistic, like everything's going to work out. And now I'm like, yeah, maybe everything won't work out. Maybe this whole thing will come crashing down. And so what? Like, whatever. I'll just rebuild it. I'll do my next thing. I'll always have a house. Like, I know lots of people. None of them are homeless, thankfully. All of them have food on the table. Like, no matter how bad things get for me, like, I'll still be able to do something. And it might not be this. It might be something else or whatever. But really putting things into perspective. And then if I fast forward 10 years from now, like, none of these problems will matter. I won't even remember what I'm going through right now, other than what I document through like journaling and stuff like that.
Right.
So really putting that in perspective has helped me.
Let me dive into that. What caused you to change that, to start changing and adapting the new perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a guy named Alex Hormozi. He's one of my favorite podcasters, influencers, mentors, whatever you want to call him. Absolutely phenomenal person. Really love his podcast. His wife's podcast is great too. She has a podcast. And he has a few episodes where he talks about like nihilism. And he's like, you know what? Fast forward 100 years from now, no one will remember that you even lived. No one's going to remember that you built the biggest balloon company, or that you built Balloon Artisan, or that you made the coolest thing. Like, no one will give a shit. No one will care. And so if it won't matter 100 years from now, does it really matter now? And if it doesn't really matter now, then just have fun and just let things roll with it, right? And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. And then also, like, I mean, I used to be part of a fairly strict religion, and that really kind of dominated my worldview. I stepped away from that several years ago, started seeing things from a different perspective. And I used to think, you know, everything will work out in the end. like there's a divine creator. Maybe there is, maybe there's not, who knows, but there's a divine creator. That's what I used to believe. And he's orchestrating all the pieces. And now I'm like, dude, this world is a chaotic mess. And we're basically really smart monkeys doing a lot of really interesting and really cool things on the planet, but we're just smart monkeys. There is no grand like plan. That's how I live my life. Right. I'm not saying that's for everyone. But.
And you look at it from the outside again, we grew up in the same religion and I'm like, okay, well, my upbringing taught me that that's bad, right? You're like, well, okay, sorry, you're not going to go to heaven then. It's not going to work out for you. But really adapting that philosophy, because I have the same philosophy. It's like, no, I don't need to think that, you know, everything has to work out or it doesn't. It's just whatever happens, happens. Let's accept everything, right? And it's going the opposite, at least from my point of like a religious teaching. Religious teaching is here's all the boundaries that you need to follow, right?
Yes.
And every boundary you set up is an expectation. And every expectation that's not met equals suffering. If you could get rid of your expectations, you're getting rid of suffering. So you go Eastern philosophy, and it's not about putting up those boundaries and guardrails of who you should be and where you should be and what you should be doing. It's about taking those down and becoming one with the universe and disassociating yourself with it, with an identity, very complete opposite of like what we're learning. And then one other thing I wanted to throw in there before I get your response, because Alex Ramos, he's awesome. Queen Elizabeth died, I don't know how long ago. He posted 3 months after, and he said, Queen Elizabeth, you know, ruled half the freaking planet, you know?
Yeah.
She died 3 months ago. None of you guys have heard her name since then. It's only been 3 months. And then it was, so just do whatever you, I mean, like, it wasn't do whatever you want, right? But do whatever you want without harming others type of thing. And you're just like, yeah, why are we so stressed about this? If Queen Elizabeth, nobody's thinking about her, probably not gonna think about me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dude, I learned that lesson really hard in COVID too. I spent a lot of time reaching out to friends and family and clients during COVID. Hey, how are you doing? Can I help you out in any way? Like, are you hanging in there? You know, all right, how are you doing mentally? And I found that most people didn't even care enough to respond for starters. Like, there's nothing else to do besides watch like Tiger King or whatever the hell everyone was doing in 2020, right? But even like my aunts and uncles and cousins and people that I thought really cared about me, like I just saw how little like my life actually mattered to them. And so when I'm with them, they act like it matters. But as soon as I'm out of sight, then I'm out of mind. I'm like, holy cow, like all these people that I grew up thinking cared about me, like my clients that I work day and night to take care of and to make sure they have a phenomenal experience and make sure their events are amazing. Like once I leave, they really don't care about me. They don't think about me anymore.
And well, let me clarify that. I would say they could care about you. Who knows? But I think it's the second they're not thinking about you.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. It's like, why am I running my whole business based on how these people are thinking about me? And it's like, wait, they're not thinking about you. Right. It's like in my 30s, I was worried about what people thought about me. And then in my 40s and 50s, I stopped caring. And then my 60s and 70s, I realized nobody was thinking about me in the beginning.
Yep. You know? Absolutely, man. 100%.
So that kind of led you to the, okay, nobody's really paying attention to me anyway. Why am I paying attention to them? And then I think that kind of leads you to, it has to come internally. It can't come from that external validation. Then, you know, build your life off of that.
Absolutely, man.
Can we pivot into pivoting? Well, you brought up COVID. You ran an event company during COVID, and we can go into when to pivot, because that's a big question. Pivot versus pushing forward, right? How do you know the difference between pivoting and just continuing to go on, try it out for a few more months?
Yeah. So the easy answer is it's always 100% clear in hindsight. And it's never clear in foresight, right? It's always just, it's tricky. One of the best kind of, I guess you could say, guidelines I've been using lately is if something feels extremely hard, like unnecessarily hard, not like I'm trying to move a mountain, something like, dude, I keep getting punched in the face because there's something I'm not learning. That's usually a sign to wake up and start questioning like, hey, is this working? So for example, before COVID with Balloon Artisan, I had a team of about 10 people. Most of them were part-time. They're, you know, they'd help me out two or three times a month. I had some graphic designers and stuff like that on the team. And we'd travel all over the freaking country building projects. And it was a lot of fun. But I had a newborn baby that came along and I couldn't be traveling all the time, didn't want to travel all the time. Finally, I got exhausted of being in airports and airplanes all the time, and I was tired of being on the road. I'm like, wow, this really sucks. And so I was just kind of fast forwarding to see, okay, well, like, if I get better and I make more money and I get more popular, what will that lead to in the end? Well, that will lead more to more of this stuff that I think sucks. And so I need to figure something else out, right? And so COVID happened. It kind of forced me to shut things down and to change up what I was doing. And then after COVID, my clients started coming back and like, hey, do you want to fly to this place? Do you want to fly to that place? I'm like, I'm just not feeling it, man. And I was talking to a guy, he's a general contractor. And I was talking to him about, you know, what I do and about Balloon Artisan. And I was like, dude, I'm really burned out of the event stuff. Like personally going there and showing up and building the things, inflating the balloons. I've done it for a long time. I'm just tired of it. Yeah. But I love the business. I love making an impact on people's lives. I love this portfolio that I've developed. I've loved these relationships. He's like, well, why don't you just team up with people that just want to go be creative and make balloons? And then like just team up with people in each city. And then that way you don't have to be traveling on airplanes all the time. And you know, like I used to have this mentality of I have to like think of all the reasons something won't work. And I found that that didn't really serve me. And so a couple of years ago, I started changing my perspective. And instead of saying this can't work or this won't work, I start thinking, how will this work? How can this work? And so when he started saying that, I'm like, dude, that actually solves most of my problems. And so I was really excited about that. And that was one of the big pivots I made in Balloon Artist.
Well, how long ago was that, that you started teaming
that
up with?
That was September 2022.
Okay. And I'm sure, I mean, that really leads my mind to, it's kind of like franchising, right? You want to open up XYZ company, you know, marketing, but maybe you don't know the business or the bookkeeping, or maybe, you know, sales, but you don't know XYZ, right? So buy a franchise, buy a system that's working, and then you could just focus out on what you're good at. But you know, if you like baking cookies, in a sense, you're doing that, right? You're finding local business owners and saying, hey, rather than you try to do all of the sales, you don't know about marketing and sales, or maybe you just need extra work, I will do it for you. You just come in and be the operator, which is what you like doing, what you're good at, and what you enjoy doing, and then you get paid for it, right? That's very similar. I mean, one, is that accurate on kind of how your model is working right now? Very similar to franchising. So tell me about that. And then also, I'd like to hear about like these local balloon artists and, you know, partners, employees, whatever, and what kind of difference it's making in their life now having, you know, maybe a lot more potential work than they were before.
Yeah. So your average balloon artist, right? There's a lot of balloon artists out there, tons of them. Your average balloon artist is doing this on the side. They have a 9-to-5 job or they're a stay-at-home parent. They're trying to make an extra $2,000 to $3,000 a month. That's what most people are trying to do. They're not trying to worry about insurance and HR and invoicing and training systems and hiring and firing and all that stuff. They don't want to do that. They're not worried about ad campaigns or click-through rates or any of those metrics. They just want to make creative stuff, make some extra money in the process. So like you said, we go to them like, hey, we need someone that can handle the creative and do the beautiful stuff. We'll take care of all the logistics, all the planning, all the design. So like when our clients reach out to us, they're working with the Balloon Artisan team. That's all they're working with. So we're not just like subbing it out and be like, hey, we'll take a middleman markup. Like they're working with our internal team and all that stuff. And then we have the artists that we work with and we train and we teach them. And they go and they execute the project according to our specifications. And it's been really, really helpful. Actually, today I was running the numbers for what we've paid our artists for the last year. And I mean, like one of them, we paid $77,000, which this is like balloon art. And we're talking
that's a full-time salary right there.
Yeah. And these guys are working like 6 days a month.
That's freaking awesome.
And so it's been really cool for them. And then the art that they create, because they're only focusing on the creative aspect, they can just do so much better than my logistic team can, because we're focused on the nitty gritty of how do we execute this event and scale the team and keep out of regulatory or compliance issues and stuff like that.
And you often, I mean, it's pretty common. You know, I'm good at my job. If people listen to the E-Myth Revisited, right? I'm a good operator. I'm a good technician. So, but that doesn't mean I'm a good business owner. And I do think, you know, you're in the world of creatives. So why do you think that creatives often struggle in business?
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's such a good question. So I think a lot of it comes down to the need to feel in control. And the reason that it took me 9 years or 10 years or whatever it was to make that big pivot at Balloon Artisan is because nobody could do it as good as me. Nobody could take care of the clients like I could. Nobody could build the cool projects that I could. And like, I just had these beliefs that kept me anchored, and I was not willing to surrender control or to rely on other people for help. And because of that, I was stuck. And the true irony is, like I said, we did 1,008 projects last year. That's a lot of projects. That's most balloon artists are doing like 20 a year.
Yeah.
So that's 50 years worth of balloon projects for your average artist. Like, that's a lot. And most of those projects turned out better than they could have if I was building them. And so not only have I had to learn how to surrender control, and I've had to learn about this kind of internal struggle that us creatives have of like wanting to have our hands in everything, but I've also learned that in the process of surrendering it, you can actually get better outcomes than if you were personally involved. And that's been a really, really cool learning experience for me.
Couldn't agree more. The more I step back, the more business seems to go better and better and better. And I'm just like, oh, okay, cool. So this belief that I told my, you have to earn it. You have to work the hours. You have to, I made that all up. So my brain went and was trying to prove me right. Right. Because my brain, yeah. I got a good brain. So if I'm like, okay, well, I have to earn it. I have to put in the work. I have to blood, sweat, and tears, or else I can't be successful. Then my brain's going to go make that a reality. Kind of similar to what you said. You know, like, I looked at everything. What are the reasons why this couldn't work? well, your brain's going to find it, right? Because you're telling your brain to go, okay, now brain, what are all the reasons that it will work? And then just watch your thought patterns. Ask yourself those two questions. Your brain just follows what you do. So very powerful there. I want to pivot a little bit into, you mentioned your, well, I guess I mentioned your wife and you mentioned your wife, but talk to me about business ownership while your spouse is also owning a business, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, the only way I've survived is because I've had so much freaking support from my wife. Not saying obviously a wife with a business can support you and you with a business can support her, but it seems like that'd be a little bit harder because you're like, babe, I'm dying. And she's like, shut the hell up. I'm going through hell too, right?
Yeah, dude, it's a roller coaster. Like, the thing about entrepreneurship is you get the highest of highs. Nobody can experience what an entrepreneur experiences when it's good. And then you get the lowest of lows. Last month was a very low month for me. It was very hard. And the weird thing about having a partner who's also riding that same roller coaster, sometimes you're up on the, you're on the highs at the same time. Uh-huh. Sometimes one of you is on a high and the other one's on a low, and it's doom and gloom for her. And for me, it's like, hell yeah, this is amazing. Sometimes it flips. Sometimes we're both low and things can get really dark. And it's like, hey, we got to pull ourselves out of this shit. Like, this is really tough. So yeah, I mean, running a business is hard. Running two in one couple relationship is extremely hard. Requires a lot of communication and love and support and understanding. But one nice thing is at the same time, we both know what it's like to go through the pain. And so we have a little more space. We hold more space and we're a little more patient with each other. It's like, okay, like, I know, a little short-tempered right now. Sorry, I got this going on. And the other one just gets it. And that's been nice.
I love that. Yeah, that's, now that you say that, I'm like, oh, that would be great. You're like, okay, you know what it's like to just be like, I want to die today, you know?
Yeah.
You can understand me. That's awesome. What do you think is the cause for most businesses or startups failing?
Yeah. So I got to tell you about a little bit of a project that I went on. So failing is my superpower. I have failed and killed more businesses than anybody I've met. Like, it's insane how good I am at being bad.
I love it.
And I actually did a tally one time, and I had 33 companies. This is a couple of years ago. I had 33 companies that I tried to start up in some capacity. Uh-huh. Some of them, you know, I spent 2 or 3 months on. Some of them 6 months. Some of them a couple of years. But 33 of them. And, you know, I read all the books. I listen to all the podcasts. I go to the entrepreneur boot camps and all those things. And so, like, I'm pretty well educated in terms of business and finances and entrepreneurship. And I'd always hear about these things like, oh, like, growing too fast is the number one cause of failure. Mm-hmm. And oh, this is the number one cause of failure. Oh, this is the number one cause of failure. And whenever I'd hear that, I'd be like, no, dude, you're wrong. Because I've never done that, but I've failed 33 times. So there's got to be something that's actually the cause of failure. And it's not premature scaling. It's not, you know, bad cash flow management, because I haven't done that shit and I've still failed over and over and over.
Okay.
And so I took several months and I just sat there and I just thought about, like, every day, I'm like, why do I keep failing? And I ended up coming to the realization, the reason, this is the definitive answer, so you can quote me on that, but the reason that a business or an entrepreneur fails is because they mistake their assumptions for facts. And so instead of saying, I think, this is my hypothesis that this will happen, they say, this is how it is. So I know if I start this business selling this product, that these people will buy. It's like, well, what evidence do you have to support that?
And super, super interesting. Hypothesis, I mean, yes. I mean, you show people your pitch deck and you're like, I want, you know, I'm raising money and I want, you know, $1 million, I'll give you 5%. And you're like, wait, so you're worth $20 million. Okay. Based on what? You have $0 in revenue. Have you seen my projections? And I'm like, yes, but that's not real. I can also make up projections. You know what I mean? Like until something's there. Now, but this is going to get me into a different topic because I actually just had this with someone, this conversation with someone else. It's like, well, no, I'm manifesting. I need to say it, whatever. And I'm like, okay, here's my response. You can manifest all you want in your mind, but don't tell me something's true if it's not. That's just a lie. And then it breaks other relationships because you're a little bit too confident, right? And then you're too confident. And then, you kind of break the trust. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the real world likes facts and the real world likes realities and tangibles and concrete data. People, not as much. Like individually, we like to believe that we're the special snowflake. We're the one that can defy the odds. We're the ones that can do it. But the real world rarely compensates you accordingly to your beliefs. And so I think a lot of ways that like manifesting can actually get in our own ways when we believe things that are not true about ourselves or about reality, right? And so like with Balloon Artisan, for years, I believed that nobody could make balloons like I could. Nobody could make the designs as good as I can. Well, that was a freaking opinion. Like that was a myth. It wasn't real. And it not only that, but it was harmful to me and it kept me stuck in a rut, right? And in the other businesses, I mean, I could talk for days about all my war stories and all the things I messed up on, but there's so many times where it's like, oh, this customer said that this is the number one problem in their business. If I build a business to solve that, they'll pay me money. And like, then I go and build it. And then the guy didn't want to give me money. I'm like, what the hell? Yeah. There's just one time, dude, like I had a guy call me up and it was when I was running my marketing agency and I was kind of transitioning into the software world. And he's like, dude, I'm 2 weeks away from bankruptcy. Can you help me? I said, you know what? I have this, like, this is what I'm doing with my software. I showed him how it worked. I was like, I think I can get you out of this spot. Give me $300. I'll get you on the software for a month. We'll see what it can do. And we'll go from there. And so I got him on the software. 3 days later, I'd closed him $10,000 in sales. And he's like, oh my God, you saved my business. Like, this is insane. Like, thank you so much for what you did. Like, I can make payroll now. This is great. I'm like, yeah, you bet. So let's talk about a long-term contract, man. So $300 a month, that cool? And he's like, whoa, I can't afford to pay $300 a month. I'm like, dude, I just made you 10 grand in 3 days. Like, I saved your business from bankruptcy and you won't sign a contract with me? And that was crazy, dude, because I had made this assumption that if I spent years building this business to help people like this guy, even like if I was successful, they'd pay me. And I realized that wasn't the truth. So,
yeah, it's, the Startup Ignition Bootcamp. I mean, we both went through it, right? With John Richards.
Yeah.
And I feel like he talks about vetting your ideas, you know, go ask granny. But if you ask granny about your idea and your widget, she's going to tell you it's good. And same with your mom, same with your dad. You have to ask them to buy it. Right then and there, like, okay, well, will you buy my first one for half off or by paying half down? And then you get real feedback, you know, it's like, oh, I would totally buy this franchise, you know? And you're like, well, all right, cool. They're 200 grand. And they're like, oh, well, never mind. Okay. Well, why not now? And then the real objections come out. But it's because, you have to, anyways, I guess I'm just leaving that advice out to anybody else. If you want to vet your business, don't just ask people about it. Try to collect deposits. Even if you will never actually take the check, that will turn the conversation just a lot more authentic and real when you're actually asking for money, even if you don't want to accept it. So,
absolutely. Have you heard of the book, The Mom Test?
Say the what test?
The Mom Test. Dude, it's the greatest book. I think the guy's name's Rob Fitzpatrick. I think if you just do a Google search for The Mom Test, it's a pink book. Really cool.
Okay.
It talks about how to go through this process of validating your ideas and how you can systematically test your assumptions. And kind of the premise is like, if you go ask your mom, hey, do you like this idea? Then your mom's going to say, yeah, I believe in you, son. This is the greatest thing ever. And that's not good feedback. But the mom test talks about how can you structure your questions and and like talking to customers in such a way that you could actually get good data from your mom. And really good book. Once again, I could talk about that for hours. I absolutely love it, but definitely worth looking up.
I like it. Kind of reminds me of like, you know, I'm sitting down at somebody's dinner table closing on solar, you know, and you're like, oh, I need to talk to my wife. And I say, okay, well, what if your wife was here, you know, how long have you been married for? If your wife was here, what do you think she would say? Right.
Yeah.
And then you're going to give me all the feedback anyway, but yeah, there's all these different ways to actually extrapolate the good data to really find out what the objections are, to see if you could overcome them and if it's worth overcoming them for both you and the prospect. So, I love that. I'm going to ask you one more question about entrepreneurship and parents, and parenting. What advice do you have? I mean, it's just, entrepreneurship just sucks your soul away at times, right? And then now you have a kid and you can't let entrepreneurship suck your soul away, or it's that kind of sucks. What advice do you have for parent entrepreneurs?
Yeah. So my little guy, he's 6 years old. I keep him pretty involved in the business. So I'll talk to him about issues that we're having, and, you know, and I don't like mention employees by name, but I'm like, hey, I have this happen with one of my team members today. How would you solve this?
That's cool.
And we have a project. I'm like, dude, like, what do you think of this project? What would you have done differently? And, you know, next week we have a project in Salt Lake City. It needs to be popped. It's been up for a month. And so I'm taking him with me to go pop it. And he has, you know, the safety goggles and this little sewing seam ripper that he calls his handy dandy balloon popper. And he pops it, right? So I really try to keep him involved. And also, I try to keep him connected to the results of the business. And so, Hope, we both run our businesses, right? And we decided, I think it's 2 years ago now, we got this like rain thermometer, and we drew on the outside of it. We drew monetary, like our monetary goal for the year, right? And so the first year it was like, I can't remember what it was, like 700,000 or something like that, 500,000. I can't remember what it was. And then what we did is we got a bunch of red lentils and we just added the lentils every 2 weeks to this thermometer. Right. So he could see us hitting our, like reaching our goal. And then, you know, last year we cleared it out, set it for 2 million and we filled that sucker up, and he got to see it. And he knew that if that bean thermometer got filled up, that this was the outcome.
Yep.
And so I really try to help him see like, hey man, this is why I do this. Like when I go skiing with you on a Thursday and everyone else's parents are working, like that's why I do entrepreneurship. When we go to Hawaii for Thanksgiving and we have the resources to do that and do what we want and eat where we want and all that, like that's part of why I do this.
Yep.
So helping him see that, not just his work. Because if you don't get them involved in the business, they can create an adversarial relationship with it where it's like, oh, like Balloon Artisan competes for my dad's attention and I compete for my dad's attention. And it can be really tough.
I totally agree with that. And I mean, all of those lessons, they're business. Those are life lessons though, right? They're business lessons, but they're life lessons. It's goal setting, accountability, communication, openness, right? Being involved as a family and as a team, all of those will correlate to helping them be a better student even, right? So super, super cool. Awesome, Keenan. This has been great, man. Where can our listeners connect with you, learn more about you personally, social medias, your company, all of the above?
Yeah, so you can look us up, balloonartisan.com is our website. We're on Instagram at balloonartisan. I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to connect with me. So Keenan Price on LinkedIn. And, you know, I try to answer to all my messages and connect with people that are wanting to connect. So love meeting other people, love talking about entrepreneurship, love talking about the good life and all the deeper than dough related topics, right?
And if you get the inside scoop with Keenan, maybe you'll get the next cocktail invite. So
yeah,
those parties
are dope. That's all Hope that does those. So she's amazing.
She does a great job. Okay, Keenan, appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you bet. Catch you later.